Welcome to the Mindfulness Coaching School coaching call. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. My name is Srdjan. And I'll be teaching in, I believe, 3 days, another Deeper Than Words class. Yeah. Thank you for coming. Yeah, this is my passion. I know some of you, yeah, Alicia. Hello.
Hi.
So, yeah, my passion for the last 15 years here in Europe and where I live in Montenegro, in this region, is executive coaching. So leadership and organizational behavior, this was the beginning of my expertise. Then I joined my intellectual forces coming together and my spiritual forces going to NVC and mindfulness, and then combine the two and try to help leaders across Europe and in the world, also working with many executives, helping them find their meaning in what they do and connecting them to themselves and to the people they lead. And this is what I call, you know, just leading from the heart and coaching from the heart, which is probably the most difficult task for the leader. So I'll structure this presentation today to you. I will speak for some time, but I would like more to make a conversational with you. So yeah, if you would like it like that. Yeah. I prefer to talk with people.
I know you do.
Yeah. But I can do some intro, you know, so you, yeah, so you maybe widen some perspectives and maybe some questions will arise in what I'm going to say. And some other people are joining also, yeah. So let me put it this way. Yeah, so leadership is very challenging, and because originally, historically, and evolutionary, it was based on performance. It was based on, you know, effectiveness and how to achieve something, how to achieve results in whatever you do. And especially to achieve that through a group of people or a team, yeah. And for some time historically, you know, and scientifically, not many research has been done on leadership. I believe it started through 80s or 90s, but there are some very specific research in the 60s and 70s done from the last century that were analyzing why people with specific traits or specific behaviors achieve more, and why some people with other traits, other behaviors, do not achieve that much. Even though it looks so at the beginning that some, you know, behaviors support leadership effectiveness and team effectiveness, in the long term, these companies actually did not survive. And there are a lot of research done in the, you know, 2000s in regard to that, and 2010s, and nowadays there are plenty of research supporting what I'm going to tell you today. And there are some leaders, political leaders, but also business leaders, that are living the premise of, you know, just being a firm and kind leader, which is a toughest thing to do. Yeah, like being a parent. Yeah. So being firm and kind and consistent is the toughest part of being a parent, but also I believe it's the toughest part of being a leader. Because as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, the effectiveness and result-oriented leadership and the organization by itself is, by its purpose, it wants to achieve something, and it usually wants to achieve more every year. Yeah. And these people leading these organizations are under constant pressure, either from themselves if they are business owners, or they are under pressure from their board of directors or business owners if they are executives, to achieve more each and every year. In the past, they achieved that more through more directive type of leadership, which means very strong, very firm, without any sense whether they need to communicate differently at any point of time. This leadership was justified by the results solely, and especially short-term results. So it's not strange to say, or it's not odd to say, that some people can produce results in the short term with the directive leadership solely, without any empathy, without any compassion. This can produce results in short term. But in long term or midterm, this type of alienation through the employees backfires. So employees and colleagues and team members actually see that they are not willing to work or sacrifice more, as to say, but the better term maybe than to sacrifice is to be engaged. So the engagement rate dropped suddenly after some years of these, what we can call very strong, formidable type of leaders. And this historically was a buildup of like a culture of being a CEO. So what does it mean being a CEO, being an executive, or being a leader? They probably heard a lot of stories from their previous leaders that they need to be strong, they need to be firm, they need to be achieving results. And possibly the only way to do that is to be, on the edge, harsh, demanding. And they just live with that premise for some time. And times change, and people also becoming more self-conscious and self-aware and more socially engaging, so they understand that, there are other type of leaders. So they started comparing the performance of their leaders with the performance of the leaders leading other companies, and people switching jobs or their managers and leaders regularly during their career also show them that there are different type of leaders and different type of perspectives and how teams could be led or should be led. So the challenge, what I wanted to present to you today, is what I call several dichotomies of leadership. And the one that is prevailing, and it's so embedded in many leaders, if you are planning to work with them, is that really that they cannot be efficient, effective, and empathetic, compassionate at the same time. So this is very hard for them to grasp. And you probably know what is the risk. What are the stories they're telling themselves when they say that? So what do you think?
Kindness and empathy and compassion are weak.
Yeah, I'm weak. Yeah, if I do that, I'll be seen also as weak. Mm-hmm. And you know that in this organization, I cannot be seen as weak. Yeah, exactly. So how do we solve that dilemma? How do we solve that specific, this is like a conviction. This is like a belief that, once you show your vulnerability, or once you are an empath, or you show that you are compassionate about other people, you become weak. And people are dangerous. That's the premise, another premise. And if I show my weakness, then what will happen next?
Oh, I'll lose something. I'll lose power. I'll lose efficiency. I'll lose.
I lose power. I lose status.
Status.
Yeah.
they will take control, and I won't be able to control them anymore.
Sense of control. And you know, in order to work with them, if we start, you know, also soft and understanding for their needs that have not been met in that situation specifically, it would be much more helpful than if we go also with our own judgment that they are then like that, you know, giving them enemy images of some people that are also judgmental, and they are going to lose their self-control or sense of their control in their teams. So what we do with leaders, we try to help them through, you know, conversational intelligence and working with them and showing with our own language and how we communicate with them, with our own example and embodiment of, you know, communication that's more empathetic and compassionate. We try to show them that you can be and. So not, it's not either or, but and. So it's not being effective, efficient versus empathetic and compassionate. It's and. So you can be both. So how they can be both? How is possible for one leader to be at the same time compassionate? And Catherine is writing in the comments, that paradigm leader has power over others versus paradigm leader who has power with others. That's another dichotomy I wanted to tell you about. And that's a very important one. So, and I will come back to it later. So how can we provide a safe space for someone to explore? That's a challenge of our coaching, isn't it? How can we provide a safe space, non-judgmental space for someone to practice compassionate type of communication and still be effective?
Maybe by bringing up situations and replaying them, you know, you could use almost role play. And what if this was the way to approach that, or this question was asked instead of, so reflection and bringing awareness to when that happens, when that kind of conversation style or communication styles getting in the way of, and how, and then reframing that situation as, you know, like that power with rather than power over, or how it doesn't really detract from getting things done. And also trying, there's the trying small steps rather. You know, so it's the challenge of taking a learning in the coaching space out into to try it in the real world, to try it to see, you know, so that it's not a total dismantling of the way of that the person has been leading, because it's complicated changing your relationships with your team or your relationships with your board or your company. So it would be a way to introduce the change in a way that wouldn't feel like it's dismantling that whole way of leading. So it could be coaching can help with that slow growth rather than turning everything upside down.
And what other coaching skills we could use? So I heard reflection, I heard forwarding the action, I heard small steps first, which is very, very important. Yeah. What we call 10% happier. Yeah. 10% forward. Yeah, just 10%. Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering if, having compassion and holding the person with whatever difficulty they're having, and showing compassion for that person, for what they're feeling, and helping them to learn about self-compassion and to see that when you are receiving compassion and when you are compassionate towards yourself, you are efficient and you are more engaged and you feel more interested in being part of a team. And so my thought is, by offering this to the person as the person we're coaching, he's experiencing it, and then with strategies to help him experience it for himself, then it might be easier for him to have confidence in the fact that being compassionate and being kind is something that can be used, as well as other strategies to have an efficient team.
Yeah. Keeping that compassionate aura and space, safe space for the client also is very, very important. Yeah. And having in mind that whenever we want to change anything, that we are positioning ourselves as we are losing something. So we need to show that they are gaining also something. Yeah. It's not about losing. It's actually gaining the effectiveness on the next level and gaining the efficiency on the next level. So, especially executives and leaders, they don't like to lose anything. they love to win, and that's okay. Yeah. And so when we think how to communicate that to them, so we need to position ourselves as compassionate, as you said, Lucy. So creating a safe space for them so they can bring out the challenges they have. So we are not becoming judgmental to them. And showing by our own example in that situation how this can happen. So this is like showing them conversational partnership or exercise, or like you, Lisha, said at the beginning. So showing by your own example how this can unfold. And also understanding that this is not the exclusion of being firm, so, or being effective and efficient. So we need to keep that in balance. So it's not about what they think is when they become compassionate or empathetic, they will lose something, and that something is so important for them. So it's like on a personal level, what we do at Deeper Than Words. Alicia was just showing that this is the exercise. So it's a do no harm, take no shit exercise. So it means you have the power to offer both. So it means I'm not here to do any harm. As a leader or as a coach, but I also know where the boundary is and what is acceptable or what is not acceptable behavior for me. So not for the other person, but for me. So what are my values? What are my standards of performance? What is something that's so dear to me? And I don't want to let that go. So you're offering other people also options. So people connect to each other because they have the similar values. They don't have necessarily the same, but they have some of them are the same, but some of them are the opposite also, so divergent in a sense. And there is something that's anchoring them, like they believe in the same thing that's leading this team forward. So yeah, when we speak or coach leaders, it's what they call values in NVC, we call needs. Yeah. So, but it's totally okay when they say values. I value this. This is important for me. Yeah. So this is the official language, so to say, yeah, of the company or the firm or how they communicate. So it becomes colloquial. So you don't introduce any language that will be confusing for them. Yeah. So they get afraid in approaching these new ways of, you know, dealing or communicating with the team members. So this is important. Yeah. So being firm and kind, being effective and efficient, these are two dichotomies that they go together. Yeah. So as in our personal life, we want to, you know, show up in the world as someone who is giving, yeah, and not wanting to harm, but to help others, yeah, and understanding that there is a boundary to it, yeah. So we do give when we are asked to, yeah. So we, as we would say, we are not saving people, we are helping when, yeah, we sense that someone needs that, but we ask for permission to give. Yeah, it's not about a delivery of everything you have or everything you know to, you know, without any standards, without any, you know, crossing your own boundaries, and then afterwards feeling frustrated why you did so, because it's not coming back to you. So like in personal life also, in leadership, it's important for them to know where their boundary is. So where is that safe space or secure space that they are not going to let go? What are the values? What are the critical values that they so long for, that they are so nurturing and they're living them? And, you know, just, you can still be kind, you can still be compassionate and empathetic in offering whatever you need to offer and still showing your boundary, you know, what needs to be done differently. Yeah, what are we standing for? So this is the communication that's typical with leaders. Yeah. Does this make sense to you?
Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah.
I really heard that parallel between the, you know, the fear of not being seen as firm or losing that control over, yeah, being seen as strong, the firm hand, yeah. And yet that kindness will somehow undermine that, and how that is so paralleled with that personal relationship between staying open but having clear boundaries, knowing my needs and my values, you know, and yet being available. And that sometimes that's not nice, like we explore in deeper than words, but it's the same with leadership. Sometimes you have to communicate you know, things that aren't received as being nice, because you do have, you don't just have your personal values or needs that you bring, which everyone does, but you have an organizational culture, yeah, and you know, strategic plan and values and a board of directors and customers and staff and union and all the different interest groups that have needs and wants and values that come along with that too. So being in a leadership role means kind of means being highly tuned to all of that. And if you're clear about your own and practice the ability to communicate in a, you know, nonviolent way, then it will have a trickle down effect through all of those as well, you know, which creates a culture that is more giving to the world rather than taking from the world. It creates a board of directors who's more trusting of your decisions and less directive themselves in a way. Like, I just see the healthy
boundary
ripples that go out, well, just from doing that with leaders, in people in leadership position, you know, how that ripple,
like a resonance.
It is.
Lucy, you wanted to say something also to add to this?
Well, I was just gonna say, like, I really like the and both. I think it's the first time that I hear it really that clearly, and that I really like that. It makes so much sense, and it makes me think of compassion and self-compassion, where there's the fierce part, and then there's the tender part. And for me, both are needed, and the fierce part is more regarded the boundaries, and the tender part is more like the kindness and the compassion. So I really like that, because it resonates as a leader, but as a person too. So it both go together, and it makes so much sense. So,
And, you know, just like in mindfulness, you know, soft front and firm and strong back. So this is the exercise also when we connect it to mindfulness. It's a soft front but strong back. So there is a boundary there. There is a wall there. And what Lisha was saying also, you know, and I will connect that to one of the Marshall's sentences. He said, this is not nice communication. This is real communication. So whoever calls it nice, it is not on the right path of this communication. So being real about it is also taking all of these dichotomies as with an and stance. Okay. So, and I will just cross to the other one that Catherine put. So power over and power with. So why they are so afraid also to use just that power with paradigm? Why? For the similar reasons why they are very afraid to lose, you know, just status and control with the compassionate and empathetic communication. So what does it mean when you say power with, and when you say power over? Power over is all about status, and but also about autonomy, and decisiveness and course of action, isn't it? So it's not like we are deleting power over. Again, it's more like a seesaw, of these opposing competencies that we oppose them in our minds and put them as either or. And I love to say, when I teach about leadership and coach about leadership, is the novice on the seesaw, they go on one or the other side. The pro is in balance, so they can have both from the opposing worlds. So they understand context. So in a specific context, something can be a strength or a weakness, depending how you use it and what are you using it. What are you using at that specific moment? So if there is a critical situation in the company, or there is a crisis going on, and you start including everyone and everyone's opinion just by promoting power with or inclusion decision making, you are going to, you know, make very bad results with that process. And they know it. It's the other thing that they are promoting everything as a crisis. That's a different, you know, story. So what we are going to help them to understand, that not every context requires power over. Yeah. Not every context requires your autonomy and decisiveness and you being formidable or strong. Yeah. It's not every context. Yeah. There are specific contexts that this is really required from you. So people are looking at you and they are judging your decisions. And if these decisions are not producing results, your status as a leader will be questioned, and they are afraid of that. Can you all relate to this? So there are six specific competencies very well researched about leadership. Okay. You can call them also traits or behaviors. Yeah. But these six, there are decades of research, and the research showed that these are critical for the success of the leader. Yeah. So the first one is integrity. Yeah. So integrity is, you know, what you say is what you do. Yeah. So you live up to your standards. You are embodying what you are saying. So this is so important for leadership. Yeah. Having character, being unbreakable about things that, you know, are important for the company, for the society, for you, your own values. Yeah. So this is integrity. Yeah. So the second one is judgment, but not the judgment from NVC, like judging yourself or others. It's making sound decisions. So just like I mentioned, so they are very afraid not to make a wrong decision. So if you make in a row several decisions that are not producing results in a team setting, your team will start suspecting that you are not able to lead them. So judgment in terms of making sound decisions is critical for leadership. And like with any skill that you can have, you can overdo it. And this is where we kick in as coaches. So explaining that in a specific context, if you make all the decisions for your children and for your team, yeah, you are taking out their empowerment, their decisiveness, their competence, and their autonomy at the end. And you will want them to be autonomous at one point of a time, like you want that with your kids. Yeah. So if someone is too much attuned to you and to your competence of making decisions, the more attuned they are, the less autonomous they will be. Does this make sense? So that's how we argument and how we show them that after one specific point, they will overdo that skill. Does this make sense? And the third one is competence. So knowing what you're doing. Yeah. So knowing your job. So understanding if it's leadership, organizational behavior, then you know how the team is led. Okay. So you understand in what type of business you are. You understand context. I trust you because you know what you're talking about. Yeah. So this is competence. So you see how these two are different, competence and judgment. You can be competent, but still making, you know, decisions. You can be knowledgeable about the topic, but still decisiveness is a completely different set of skills. Yeah. So you understand that they are successful because of that and in spite of that. So, and they understand it. They really understand it, especially if they are on the top position. They got majority of these right, or they are close to majority of these competencies that I'm mentioning right. So you offering different perspective and taking that out of them is immediately producing what?
Oh, doubt.
Yeah. So we are on the, you know, just a very slippery road, you know. I need to be decisive, you know, I need to make firm decisions. They will say that, yeah. And who is the most competent person in the room? I am. I know. So when it comes to integrity, this is not the case. Yeah, integrity is number one leadership competence, you know, that's judged by the team members, that doesn't need to change or something like that. This needs to be to stay as it is, yeah. But for judgment and decisiveness and being competent and knowing your topic is a different set of skills, yeah. And the fourth is having a vision, yeah. So having vision how things could be in the future, and being able to explain that in simple terms, in the first necessary steps to achieve that vision, is one of the critical also competencies or things that leader needs to have. And again, if they overdo it, yeah, they can become dreamers, or to label that as eccentrics also. So yeah, not being able to connect with the people they are leading. So again, being real and coming back to your team and understanding what they need and what they are willing to give and follow is also critically important. Yeah. So that's how we give that seesaw balance to these competencies, yeah. And there is a plenty of research in the last 2 decades about 2 other traits. These are new, yeah. And this is humility and competitiveness. Yeah. Being humble, but at the same time, very competitive. Jim Collins wrote a book, Good to Great, yeah. And he distilled 15 companies with extraordinary, I think it was 15 with extraordinary performance. And they, all the team members and employees regarded that to their CEO. And 2 traits popped up. One was humbleness. You could not recognize that CEO in a room full of people. You wouldn't know that is a CEO. That's humbleness, yeah. And the other one is, they were fiercely competitive in spite of humbleness. Yeah. So these 6 actually create, you know, by research, yeah, which is very important. This is not my opinion or someone else's opinion. This is typically done is in longitudinal studies. Yeah. And these 6 competencies showed up as something that team members appreciate, something that produces results also in real life. So these companies were having extraordinary results or performance in comparison to other companies. And those that survived also in long term. Yeah. So when you think about survival, this is a, that's why we, when we think about leadership, we also are thinking about the question of survival, whether the group will survive or not. So they are not willing to follow someone who will lead them to basically organizational death. Yeah. So, and strong leaders know this, and sometimes because they are so good in performing for the organization, they overdo that. And they become then, you know, what they don't want to become. Yeah. They become then labeled by others as arrogant, too competitive, micromanaging, harsh, blunt. Yeah. These are all labels from the their employees and how they see them, yeah, in terms of their reputation. Yeah. Does this make sense? So Catherine as studies looking at or comparing male-female leadership styles. Yeah, when it comes to styles, there are differences, yeah. And at the end of the day, data from companies that we are representing also that do this research for the last three decades showed that when women are given the same playing field, okay, so same starting point, they can be as effective as male leaders. So not less, not more. It's just they can be as effective as male counterparts are. Yeah. So when it comes to specific behaviors, up to these, yeah, which are very important, women have these empathetic skills more. So they are less seen as, you know, formidable, harsh, yeah. And consequently, they are not as many times promoted to leadership positions as men, because board members also have these biases that I just mentioned. So they are looking for someone who can promise results by being very strong, harsh, you know, visionary type of leader. Yeah. Does this make sense?
Oh, what I'm hearing, oops, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So please. What I'm hearing from you, like in these competencies, sorry, I don't see compassion and I don't see kindness or empathy. So does it mean that it's not as critical, or does it mean that it's...
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. And humility by definition means humbleness, means listening to others also, yeah, not positioning yourself above others. And these are new competencies, and this is developing also. And empathy research has been done maybe more strongly in the last decade. So these data have been collected also. So being empathetic really means a lot. So and there are for now that these are specific real life examples that are showing that empathy produces results. And I will give you a few of them. Yeah. So one of them is Satya Nadella, and he's a CEO of Microsoft. Have you ever heard of him? Yeah. So he came and inherited basically a Microsoft leadership position from Steven Ballmer. Steven Ballmer was more regarded as this formidable type of leader, very strong, very harsh, very blunt at times. Yeah. But the company went from A company to C company, yeah, under his leadership. And then Satya Nadella came, and there was a rule in Microsoft, it's similar to stack ranking. If you know what that means, like they compare themselves inside of the company, who is better and who is worse every 3 months, and who is worse suffers. So it's like a game of who is right and who is wrong. And this produced, you know, total disengagement in the company. So what Satya Nadella did first, he stopped these kind of meetings. And he introduced NVC also to the board members, to all executives, nonviolent communication. And he also introduced Carol Dweck's book, Growth Mindset. Yeah. And these two together produced, you know, just a specific culture in the years to come of Microsoft promoting one of the values, very strong values in Microsoft, you can check that, is D&I. So diversity and inclusion is very important. And diversity and inclusion comes directly from your capacity to be an empath, yeah, to be compassionate, understanding the differences from other people. Yeah. So yes, the research for empathy, compassion, and it goes in line with humbleness, but also with the research of emotional stability, like from the personality assessments. Emotionally stable leaders are, it's driven, this compassion is driven from stableness in a sense, So all of this combined, there is a survival part that are all followers looking at in a team. So is this person going to destroy this team? So it's actually influencing our lives, or this is person who actually knows what they are doing and their integrity is high. Yeah. So integrity high combined also with humbleness gives a predictable behavior of the leader. So this means they will not be that volatile also emotionally. So they will be also more compassionate and empathetic. Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome. Yeah. Any other questions you would like me to cover?
I have another one, sorry.
Yeah.
What I don't see, like I see humility and I see integrity, but I don't see team-centered or team approach, or is that included in any of those?
Yeah, this is the result. So all of this is, producing team results and team engagement. So these are the things that actually produce engagement. Yeah. So people, when they have this in their leaders, they are actually very much engaged and very much flourishing in that team. Yeah. So I want you to imagine yourself in a situation where you are led by a leader who has very high integrity. Yeah. So what he promises you actually delivers. Yeah. That's has a sound judgment, left or right, helps you also make sound judgments, teaches you how to make good judgments, because we all this is a role model, yeah? So we learn how to make good judgments, who is very competent and know what they are doing, and you can learn a lot from them, yeah? And they can picture each and every step how to get there. They have a vision, so they are very inspiring, yeah? They speak with utter conviction about what their values are and where they are going. So this is a vision. And when it comes to giving you space, giving you autonomy, and giving you respect, this is humbleness. Yeah. And you will be seen, your voice will be heard, yeah, and you will be included. So all of this is, of course, promoted with an effective and efficient communication and style. Yeah. So when I think about it, it's more rounded white. Yeah. So it's every of these skills includes actually an effective communication style. Yeah. And competitiveness is more outer. So the needle of that competitiveness is not inside. Yeah. So I'm competing with you and I'm better than you as a member of my team. So it's more like how to, win in the market through innovation, like Microsoft did, yeah. Like producing new products, new processes, new behaviors. So this is more like outer driven, yeah. Does this make sense?
Yes, thank you so much.
Welcome. Yeah. So this is like a like a seesaw of critical behaviors. Yeah. And all of these are actually a potential for a coaching engagement and session, because some of these will be underplayed or overplayed. Yeah. Except integrity. Yeah. And also they can become, there is another dichotomy that maybe I didn't mention, this is becoming strategic tactical. So either strategic or tactical, too much of it. Yeah. So too much strategic or too much tactical. So this is a what we call in OB, what and how of leadership. Yeah. So what the leader is doing and how it is doing it. Yeah. So how has to do really with, you know, IQ spectrum of, you know, intelligence, like making sound decisions has a lot to do with systemic thinking and pattern recognition, being able to see, to having uncanny ability to see through data, through trends and make sound decisions. And they can be also EQ, yeah, so emotional intelligence, like communication, and so how they are doing it, yeah. And there comes kindness, there comes, you know, compassion and empathy and listening, active listening. So this also, active listening produces or gives space to your specific process of judgment or making sound judgments or sound decisions. Yeah. So if you are not listening well, you will be unable to make decisions that are sound. Yeah. So you see how this is all intertwined and connected. It's not just, so when you think about communication, compassion, it's all over the place. Yeah.
I'm sort of seeing it as IQ and EQ, that emotional intelligence, which is broken, has those elements of, can be broken out conceptually into, you know, like teamwork and active listening and even boundaries and, you know, self-awareness and you need to have strong IQ and EQ in order to be strong in integrity and judgment and those competencies that create successful leadership. So as a coach, it seems like that's actually a very nice, simple framework for very complex work, to be able to identify areas of weakness or strength, you know, and then work with that sort of breakdown, going backwards a little bit into how does, you know, working on self-compassion, say, going back to the beginning, help with compassion for, you know, which then leads to, you know, a better use of competitiveness as a leadership quality, because it is just a way to, you know, it's a leadership quality. It's not something, it's not personal. It's not something I own, you know, being competitive. If I'm bringing it to my leadership role, it's something that I can strengthen or back away from. I can use it when needed, when I'm conscious of it, right? So, yeah, so it has a lot to do with that awareness and as coaches, you know, bringing that to people. Yeah. And I love your seesaw metaphor. But what happened when you were describing it earlier, and how someone who's just learning or, you know, neophyte at the beginning may be leaning heavily on one side with this either or dichotomy in thinking or using these skills, and someone who's more experienced uses a balanced approach. I actually saw it as a web where it moved from being a line. All these things have these lines of points at either end where people are moving back and forth on, to being more of a web where these things, you, as you build experience and awareness, you're able to shift modalities as needed, and you can crisscross, and they become, I don't know what it's called when it's on the computer and those blobs grow and shrink as people, word clouds, I guess, where depending on, you know, how much emphasis is being put on a certain word, it gets bigger or smaller. That's kind of how I was seeing it, that you then shift gears into which one needs to be more at the forefront in this situation, you know, and which then you can pull out. And that applies to leading ourselves as well. You know, that actually works really well for that sort of self as leader as well.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you. And yeah, Catherine said, see social necessity for flexibility to shift. Exactly. Yeah. And that's why the trend of learning and leadership agility, yeah, all over the place now. Yeah. So this is being agile means, you know, being able to shift from these perspectives very fast and using the seesaw balance in a right way, depending on the context and the situation. Yeah. And when you think about, you know, NVC and how we position it and the communication is, you know, communication has three branches or three lines. So we can listen. Yeah. So there's a maximal empathy and we can clearly see how empathy promotes some all of these skills. Yeah. And there is a speaking part, yeah, which is based on sincerity and clarity and how you promote your ideas, especially in the vision part, and how you make this utter conviction and it's visible and seen when you speak that you are actually clearly competent and visionary about how the future looks like for your team. And if there are challenges, there is an inside communication, how you actually relate to yourself. Are you able to give yourself empathy? And are you able to be compassionate to yourself and mindful enough to be present to yourself and to the world that you are leading? So this is basically, in a nutshell, how do we, you know, just coach and lead from the heart. So, yeah. And thank you again for being here. If you have any other question, I'm willing to answer. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry, I do have to go at the top of the hour, but it's been really wonderful learning from you again and with you. And I wish you all the best in the new class. I know I spoke with someone this morning who's excited about starting with you in a few days. So that's very cool.
Yeah, thank you, Alicia. Thank you. And if you have any questions, also relate back to Mac so he can help you with the class or anything like that. So, and thank you, Lucy. Thank you, Catherine, also for joining and helping this to be a good class.
I really appreciate having been able to hear you today. I've learned a lot in just an hour, and I want to take your class. So I'm going to be joining at one point or another. I'm sure I will see you again. So thank you so much for your wise words and everything that you shared, because it's very useful.
Thank you. Thank you all. And thank you, Catherine. Bye.
Bye. Take care.
Take care.